Many of you know that I'm currently coaching an under-11s cricket team. My son Tom plays in that team, and we're having a good season. We've won quite a few games, we've lost a few, but the boys are having fun, and at this age of being 10 or 11, that's the main thing, is that they're enjoying their cricket. Well, Friday week ago, we had our first game back after 6 weeks of school holidays break, and I was really surprised, in fact, pleasantly surprised by how much that improved in that six-week break, where we hadn't done any training or played any games, and yet they came back and they played out of their skin. Now, over the Christmas time, as often happens with boys of that age, they've had growth spurts. And so their bowling is actually quicker than what it was before Christmas. They're throwing, when they're fielding, they're picking the ball up and throwing it much more further and more accurately, and they're batting with so much more power. It's been this noticeable difference in just 6 weeks, how much more powerful they've become in their cricket. Now, on our last training session, so last Monday night, I got two of our team's quickest bowlers. And I said to them, I want you to let yourselves go a bit. I want you to bowl as fast as you can at me in the nets. And I'm going to put, I got the bat, I got Tom's bat, his little size 5 bat, so it was a bit small for me. I didn't have any gear on because I didn't have any pads or anything like that, but I'm an experienced cricketer, so I know what I'm doing. And so I'm batting, and these guys start bowling to me, and I'm playing nicely, and it's all very good. But then they get quicker and quicker and quicker. And I even missed a couple of deliveries. Like, well, fortunately, they didn't hit me, but I missed. And I realised after I'd finished that net session, and probably about 10 or 15 minutes, and I was sweating. And I think I was sweating more because of nervousness, that I think I'm in trouble here, I might get hit, than anything else. But I realised then that that would be the last time that I go into a net with a hard cricket ball facing boys aged 10 or 11 or 12, because they're just getting too quick. Even at that age, there's this power to their game that just wasn't there before. It seemingly come from nowhere. It's astonishing to me and incredibly surprising. Now today, Jude's just read us out a story from Mark, and it's a story about power. It's a story about a supernatural power intersecting with the natural, about heaven being torn open, about the audible voice of God, about angels coming and tending to Jesus. And almost nowhere, so it seems, in Mark's gospel, we are confronted with power, an astonishing power, a surprising power. It's God's power, a power that is unleashed and a power that is within reach. As Mark describes Jesus' baptism by John, he says, heaven was torn open. And all that were there witnessing this event could see this for themselves, that God's power was at work in the present, in that current moment, and it was a power that just could not be denied. And so in that moment, eyes were opened, ears could hear the reality of God's kingdom coming near. God's surprising power, seemingly from nowhere, astonishing, a power unleashed, a power within reach. And when this happened, there was a new reality that came of brokenness restored, of disease healed, of fear being turned to boldness, of rescue from bondage, of forgiveness and freedom. This new reality broke forth. And it's a new reality that, if we want it, breaks forth for us today. What I want to do as we sit in this passage for just a few moments is look at what Mark's saying about God's power here and explore how it might be that we could access this power in the now, in our current situations. No matter what is happening around us at this moment, God's power is there for us to access. And so today we're going to explore what we can from this passage about how we experience God's power in our lives right now. There's three things I think we can glean just from this passage. The first one, and I spoke about this last week and I need to mention it again, is just be baptized. Be baptized. Last week I encouraged anyone who is serious about following Jesus, who is yet to enter the waters of baptism, to take up this challenge and to be baptized. And in this passage, I think Mark is giving us what is the greatest reason, the greatest example as why we should be baptized if we're serious about following Jesus. And that is that Jesus did it. And we're meant to model our lives on him. Following him means we try and become like him. And if Jesus entered the waters of baptism, so that's a good enough reason, surely, too, for us. Now, I've got my own story of baptism to go on here and the experience of power that happens as you step into the waters of baptism. I was 16 years old, hardly a mature Christian at the time by any means, and yet I knew at that time that I was serious about wanting to follow Jesus. And I can remember I wore my cricket whites. You know, I was a cricketer, so when back in those days, you wore white clothing when you got baptized, and it represented that God's, you know, purification, his cleansing work. So you got in these white clothes, and so the only white clothes I had was my cricket whites. And so I got my cricket whites on. Unfortunately, there was a big red mark going down the leg where I'd been polishing the cricket ball. So unfortunately, the metaphor of God's cleansing didn't quite work perhaps as well as it should, but I remember being baptized, and I remember feeling so nervous at that time of getting up in front of the whole church. Probably seemed like 3,000 people there. In reality, it was about 50, but it felt like a heap of people that were there, and I had to get up, and I had to share what God had been doing in my life and why I'd made this decision to follow him, and I remember feeling so nervous. I remember entering into the waters of baptism. I remember getting wet. I remember the minister who baptized me didn't really know what he was doing, and so when he put me down and pulled me back up again, the water went all up my nose, and I came up coughing and spluttering and splurting all over the place. And I remember afterwards, just immediately afterwards, there's a group of us got baptized on this particular day, and we're all out the back in the back room of the church. And it was like electricity was running through our bodies. There was this feeling of excitement. We were celebrating. There was this joyfulness that you just can't describe. There was this glow inside. There was a party in heaven, I'm sure. And knowing that God's smile was upon me, there was this experience of his presence in that moment. God's power. God's power drawing us nearer to him. God's power unleashed, and his power within reach. The second thing I think we can glean from this passage is that we need to know that we are adopted and loved. We need to know that we are adopted and loved in order to access God's power. As Jesus got baptized, not only did this reality of heaven came near, but God's voice was heard. And what God said is really instructive to us here. He says to Jesus, "You are my son, whom I love, and with you I am well pleased." Now, these words here reflect the harmony and the closeness of the relationship of God within the Trinity, but they also point to another remarkable truth in the Bible. And it's astonishing to think that these words that God spoke over Jesus are in fact the same or similar words to which he speaks over us, each and every one of us. We are adopted. We are God's sons. We are God's daughters. And when we come to Jesus and we experience and encounter him and we start to understand and realize that we are in fact adopted, we are heirs to his throne and all that that means, we start to see God's power at work. Just this last week, I posted on our Facebook group, by the way, if you're not part of our Buzz Facebook group, let me know and I'll make sure you get on there. But I posted on our Facebook group an interview that Light FM did with a young guy called Terence Leong. Now, I came across Terence in my days as a youth minister when I was at Crossway Baptist Church, and it's fair to say that Terence was a wild kid of about 15 at that time. He'd grown up in a home of neglect and abuse. He was removed from his home. He was put in the care of a friend of mine called Andrew, who became his foster father. And as a teenager, Terence was an angry young man. Just the way he carried himself, he exuded this anger, and he used to muck up all the time. He got in trouble with police. There were issues there with addiction, all sorts of things going up on with him. But Andrew, his foster father, just never gave up on him. And Andrew journeyed with him and kept journeying with him. And slowly and surely, the love of Andrew began to turn Terence around. He started coming to the youth ministry that I led, and we put some effort into Terence. We made sure that he was welcomed just as he was, and that we loved him regardless, and that he always had a place there. And it was a bit of a journey that Terence went on here, and he came 2 steps forward, 3 steps back, and then 3 steps forward and 2 steps back, and it was all very tenuous at the time. As a young adult, there were times where he was teetering right on the edge and we weren't sure which way he was going to go. But God never gave up on him. And one day Terence found himself in this desperate situation, so he remembered how the only time when he was a teenager that he had any sense of happiness was the time that he was involved in the youth group and living with Andrew. And so he returned to church, and slowly and surely God began to do a remarkable work in this young man. He met a girl, he fell in love with this girl, he ended up marrying with her. And from an angry young man, he's become a loving husband. He's become a dedicated father. He's got himself an occupation as a financial advisor, and he's giving wise financial advice to people that pay a lot of money for his services. And most importantly, he's become a man who's passionate about God and passionate about helping other young men who are in the same situation that he once was. And as I listened to the interview and I heard Terence tell his story, I was reflecting on the 15-year-old Terence that I knew. It's astonishing. It's amazing. This is a story that can only be attributed to God's power. God's power drawing people to him who seem so far. We have people in our lives today, we have family, we have friends who we think and we look at them and we think they're so far from God, there seems to be no hope whatsoever for them. And yet God's power can do it. God can reach out. God can draw people to him. Terence was lucky because he got to meet Andrew. And the love that Andrew had for Terence modeled the love of the Father God. And Terence began to understand that he was adopted, not just by Andrew, but by God. And as he started to understand this adoption, he was set free into a life that was beyond even his wildest imagination when he was age 15. And what's true for Terence is true for every single one of us, no matter what our story is, no matter what we bring today. When we come to that point of truly knowing and understanding that we are God's sons and we are his daughters, we are adopted by him, and when we understand that, when we understand the love that he has for us and what we are actually heirs to, we can't help but be changed. We can't help but see God's power at work in us and through us. This theme of adoption is very common in the New Testament. In fact, Paul, the Apostle Paul, writes about it all through his writings in Romans, in Corinthians, in Galatians and Ephesians, and all of these mentions of how God actually adopts us as his sons and daughters. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 17, God says, I will be a father to you, and you will be my sons and daughters, says the Lord Almighty. For those who have decided to follow Jesus, for those who have already put their trust in God, you know that you're washed clean. You know that you've been made righteous in God's sight. And you know that when he looks upon you, what he says is, this is my son. This is my daughter, who I love, and whom I'm well pleased. The third thing I think we can glean from this passage when we look at God's power is that we need to see opposition as a precursor to victory. We need to see opposition as a precursor to victory. Whenever you step out into what God has for you, it might be to get baptized. It might be to follow him in some other way. It might be just increasing your awareness and understanding around your adoption in God. But whatever it is, when you step out into those things of God, it's possible, it's even likely that there will be some opposition. There'll be a battle that happens around you. And it certainly happened for Jesus here. He went from the high of getting baptized, of seeing heaven open, of hearing the voice of God, straight out from that and into his own wilderness experience. Literally, a wilderness experience. 40 days, 40 nights in the wilderness. We're told in other translations he was fasting and Satan came and tempted him. And Jesus went straight out here into a spiritual battle. And the battle was intense, the opposition was fierce, but it only served as a precursor to victory. For Jesus would not succumb. Not only that, he would go on to minister to many. He would heal the sick, he would raise the dead, he would die on a cross, he would defeat death once and for all when he was risen again. Opposition is only the precursor to victory. The reality of following Jesus is that we all face opposition from time to time. And it comes in us in all sorts of different ways. Maybe some of us here experience the pain of a child who we love making poor decisions. Maybe some of us have to navigate a parent who is manipulative in their behavior. Perhaps you should know better, but it's challenging. Maybe some of us are dealing with a lazy work colleague who takes credit for work that they don't do. Maybe some of us have a self-centered neighbor for whom the normal civility is not something they tend to care about. The opposition comes in all sorts of ways. It can come like that in the terms of our relationships with others, but it can come in other areas as well. One of the more common areas that we will experience opposition is within our health, whether it be our physical health or emotional health or mental health. There can be opposition, either our own experience ourselves or those that we love and care about. And when we're in the battle, it can be exhausting. It can be really tiring. And we often feel, you know, will this ever end, this battle that I'm in? It's good to be reminded by this passage today that no matter what the battle, it's always a precursor to victory. I want to invite the worship team to come forward.